Welcome to Try Not to Blink, a podcast about the ups and downs, ins and outs, news, tips, and tricks of those who live the optometry lifestyle. We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible and hundreds, thousands of successful fits for all of your specialty contact lens patients. Please don't forget the custom stable scleral lens. My name is Dr. James Diem, and I am on the East Coast, and Dr. Roya Habibi is representing all of Central America and South America now, I think, too. What's up, Dr. Habibi?
Need to change our intro to be...
I'm trying.
Jimmy is repping North America.
Ooh,
and
yeah,
Roya
yeah.
We're repping... Latin America.
A country. Now.
And I like that every time.
We used to be bi-coastal. Now we're bi-country.
But we have reduced a time zone, which is ideal.
Are we 2 hours apart now?
Now we're 2 hours, not three. Jimmy doesn't know, but I know that.
Well, it got messed up with the time.
Daylight savings did mess with it because Costa Rica doesn't do it. But we're soon the U.S. might not do it either.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys remember, but like 3 years ago,
four score
early on, taught everyone on the any of you original listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
Why? Remember when we talked about it right around daylight savings time?
We should do that again next year.
I don't know. I feel pretty strongly. If I had a say, I would say that there shouldn't be times change either.
It's dumb. Oh my God. I've been screwed up ever since. I'm having a tart. I can't get up early anymore. And
it's been 10 days.
I'm still having a hard time with it. You think I should be back to normal now? Is that what you're saying?
No. Well, close-ish. I would say. Okay. Tell me here.
I agree with you.
Would you rather?
I think I should be too.
Would you? Maybe you have mono. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Do you think that you should stay in daylight savings time or OG time? Because one of the arguments right now against this bill that they're potentially going to pass is that it should stay in the original time.
And why is that?
Gosh, I'd have to look it up, but I think it has to do with like kind of maybe what you're saying. And I don't know. I wish I could say. I'm going to be just making it up right now. And my internet, you know, is too unstable to be able to go searching right now.
Oh my God.
I'll spare us that blip.
This is it right here.
Okay, Jimmy, we haven't talked about anything like a patient, like a interesting case recently. Give us a quick one. You've got a short time, so don't tangent for 10 minutes.
Oh, God. You give me a tough one. You know, I think I've said this before, but I've been on a streak lately of, you know, we live in northeastern Pennsylvania, 2 hours from New York City. We have a lot of New York City transplants in Pennsylvania. And in particular, we get a lot of Dominican, Puerto Rican patients in my Hazleton office who have really, really real glaucoma, like, not talking about your 4 or 5 cups, you know, Ethel, who like, you know, 85 and has like 19 pressures and you got her on Lumigan and she's at 17 and you're just cool. I'm talking about like blind, cupped out, one eye, the other eye, like there's like 3 nerve fibers left and you're like
3 nerve fibers.
Yeah, seriously. And they're, you know, post-surgical and then add diabetes into that. And so it's just always so challenging, you know, because they come in and, you know, we're on call at the hospital. And, you know, I always get these patients from the hospital and they call and they're like, you know, I got this guy. I can't even get the TonoPen to work. It's so hard. They're in pain. You know, so I had one recently who, you know, blind eye, painful, you know, just a situation of getting their blood sugar under control and then their eye pressure under control. I was thinking blood sugar because, you know, the complication with that is they're already on 15 drops. They had a bleb. They're blind and then they're diabetic. So do you put them on Diabox? Do you not? nine times out of 10, I put them on Diamox for a couple of days and I let them know your sugar is going to go up. But, you know, here's the sad part of this. You know, these patients, you know, are at the whim of their family. And so, you know, if whatever family member decides to leave, you know, wherever they're living, then, you know, if they have established care in New York, which a lot of them do, they don't get back, you know. So on both of these occasions, they're patients that are elderly, moved with some family member here because, you know, that's what other people were doing. And they haven't been to their any doctor, any, in like sometimes 6 months, sometimes 2 years. And I mean, end stage glaucoma and like brittle diabetic. You could just imagine. It's a total shit show, you know.
That's sometimes when I feel like eye care is a first world problem, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like how much we scrutinize certain problems versus whether it be a patient like that or, you know, when you're practicing, if you go on a Voss trip or things like that, you realize like, how is this going to fit into this person's life? Of course, yeah. Vision is a huge concern and something that we need to be extremely responsible for in our roles. But I don't know. It's just this predicament, right? Like you tell them the facts. You don't want to like, you want to scare them a little so that they like take it as important. But also there's, just like you said, there's all these variables that come into play that are out of their control sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, a couple just of those like really complicated patients that I've had lately. And I love the challenge, but then the second challenge is now what do I do with them?
Right.
You know, cause no insurance, very bad, transportation options, don't drive, basically blind, you know, but trying to preserve that last bit of vision. So
yep.
We try our best, you know, and we throw the book at them and see if we can get them in with somebody, but it's tough.
It's tough. It is, yeah, what it is.
It is. Yep. Yep. What about you?
Right now, my most exciting thing is picking out inventory for my office.
Oh, okay.
I've been picking out what we're going to have, not only like in the exam rooms, things as simple as Kim wipes. My managing partner and husband, I'm like, I need Kim wipes. Patrick's like, can't tissues work? I'm like, no, I need Kim wipes. I need the Kim wipes. But just going through everything you need in your room and then also beyond, what do we want to carry? So one of the things that, I don't know, I'm kind of excited about, aside from just your obvious optical wear, your, you know, all of your dry eye products that we are going to carry. But one of the products that we're going to carry in my office is SPF. And SPF to use around your eyes. So it's really hard to get good quality SPF of good brands in my area. And it's also very hard to get things sent to you. I lived in Seattle and now I live in a place I can't even get things shipped to me, period, reliably. So, and then two, I want to have the best thing available. So I'm going to carry a nice skincare line of lotion and SPF to use around your eyes to help with, you know, skincare around your eyes. So yeah. I'm excited about that. Just one fun thing.
Very
that
cool.
I'm sort of getting.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's fantastic.
And basically I'm learning that any product that's sold, the product that I'm talking about or referring to, it brand is called Super Goop. And it's on most lists of clean products, you know, good actual SPF protection ability. If that's the way you say it. It's on all the lists and the ingredients. They don't have a lot of harmful chemicals and any company basically that you want to sell. If you scroll all the way down on the website, there's almost always a wholesale form that you go in. And as a company, especially as a private practice, you have a tax ID number and you can become a wholesaler. So it's really not that hard. Mm. And then I get to have my favorite lotion at my disposal. It's a win-win. I'm excited about it.
Awesome.
Small wins.
Sometimes that's all you need.
Okay. So something I haven't let anyone onto quite yet, not that it's a secret, it's kind of like a new thing, but I've been recently part of something called Presbyopia Physician. It's a new editorial or, you know, magazine, which I don't know if anyone gets it in print, but it does come online and virtually, which is fabulous. So I made the effort to read an episode or read March's Marches.
Episode when you're right,
right. I read Marches.
Oh, what a long episode.
Document,
I mean,
or whatever. Why can't I think of the word? Like, it's Marches magazine. Because I happened to be in it, so that's why I actually read it. And I was reading through, and I got to a article that was super interesting. So let me just, like, give you the subject line real quick. It's survey which IOL would doctors choose for themselves. So kind of fun, right?
SLT.
IOL, get out of here.
SLT. I'm just kidding.
Okay, so I'm like reading through all the answers because it's kind of fun to answer that question. Like, I recently had one of the doctors that I worked with back in Seattle. He got cataract surgery. So, like, watching him go through that, you know, deciding was really fun. But anyway, to ask everyone else, a lot of the people who are on the editorial board gave responses, including our guest tonight, who is Dr. Bin Deng. He said that he would do both Symphony and Synergize if it was for his own eyes. He'd go for the Symphony extended depth of focus lens in his dominant eye and the Synergy extended depth of focus.
I was going to say Synergize. So yeah. Did I miss something?
Did I say that?
No, yeah, you did.
He wants a soft skirt in the art center. He's a synergized kind of guy.
You know what I mean.
I thought I missed something. I'm not in a cataract referral center, so I'm like, all right, I'll just be dumb over here and wait for you guys to educate me.
My bad. Maybe they should change the name because that sound rolls off the tongue easier, I suppose. But the Synergy extended depth of focus in his non-dominant. Did I say to do it again?
We have a naked Patrick sighting. A naked Patrick sighting.
We're clothed.
No, he's naked. All right, sorry. Sorry,
it's
doctor.
Too hot
it's more
here,
that
okay?
way. It's more exciting that way.
Yeah. This is my new thing that I point out in every episode because Roya is now in Costa Rica. Her husband just walks around naked in the background. Somebody could get a
not naked, not naked.
I mean, when it's like 90 degrees with like 90% humidity.
Anyway, let's be real.
Who here on a FaceTime actually has pants on? Let's be real.
Never.
No. Never. Shorts are more comfortable. I mean, it's
exactly.
There you go.
Okay, but seriously, back to Dr. Din. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You guys are my first podcast recording.
Is that right? Seriously?
Pop my cherry. Yes. I take it back. Second. I got interviewed by Dave Kading on Optometric Insights. So that was my first.
Okay, fine.
Okay. All right. Well, almost. We'll be the bridesmaid. You know, we'll be the bridesmaid. That's fine. All right. Bridesmaid.
Well, for those who don't know who Dr. Deng is, he is working currently in Bakersfield, California. It's a central part of California no one really hears about.
Yeah, it has
a lot of cows and stuff.
Yes. Cows, a lot of that's exactly where it is. Yes. We actually have a lot of oil too. So it's ag and oil. Yeah. You got these like oil rigs.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So when I first moved here, I was like, what is up with these like mechanical oil things? And we're pumping oil. I know oil.
You were
right
thinking,
now
is that a cow lift?
Yeah. I don't know. It's, very confused.
I didn't know. I don't think I even noticed that on my previous drives up the 5. Anyways, prior to that, right out of school, was a optometrist at LensCrafters for a short stint. Graduated from SECO, which is now Marshall Ketchum, I believe.
Yes.
Another fun fact, he was born in Paris, France, grew up in Paris, didn't leave Paris until like 16.
Oui, madame. Oui, monsieur.
Oh, wow.
Je sais parler français.
Amazing. Honestly, we were just talking about this prior to before we started. But we were talking a little bit about culturally what the U.S. does to like the mentality of work versus honestly every other country, really. We were talking a little bit about how, I mean, currently right now I'm starting this practice. I have a lot of downtime, but I'm getting used to this. Like I have no job feel. Like I like getting up on my own time. I don't have any appointments. I'm like, okay, let's build in a board meeting today, aka let's go surfing.
Board meeting.
Right. I stole that from someone else, but I like it. But seriously, and Dr. Dang was talking about similar lifestyle in Europe, right? I mean, what tell the listeners a little what we were talking about.
Yeah, so I mean, in Europe, it's like people just, they don't work like grind, work, you know, they work like, you know, 40 hour a week, and then they clock in, they clock out, and then they go enjoy life, because that's what they do. And, you know, they earn a paycheck so they can enjoy life. They're not about, you know, climbing the corporate ladder or trying to, like, you know, just you know, try to, like what you said earlier, you know, it's like you accomplish something and then you want to accomplish the next thing, right? It's for them, it's kind of like, well, you know, I'd rather spend time with a family or take a 2-month summer vacation in Italy, you know, or, you know, I read somewhere that, you know, even though in the United States, you know, people have, you know, time off and things like that, but they're the number one country that don't use their time off, right? Because it's just like, you got all these people, you hear about all these people that have accrued so much PTO, but they don't use PTO. And they actually, like, when they leave the company, they have to, like, cash out their PTO. I'm like, that is crazy to me. It's like, you know, when growing up in France, I mean, we would take, like, these vacations in the summertime. We'd go, like, you know, we'd come to the US for like 2 months at a time, and, you know, we would that's what it is. It's just people enjoy themselves.
You still have family there?
I do, yeah. I still have, like, cousins and aunts. No immediate family, but we still have, like, you know, some friends and uncles and
a good enough reason to visit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I took my wife there about 8 years ago, and it was nice to just kind of take her there and show her where I grew up, and show her the school that I went to, elementary school, and the mall that I went to.
How long were you there, though? 2 months or one week?
Yeah. A week, yes.
Right. Welcome to 3 days. Long weekend.
Yes, right?
Packing in 7 other countries in a matter of 3 weeks.
Right. Well, actually, right? Yeah.
And probably doing webinars and podcasts.
Totally.
Meetings.
I think it is weird that other countries do, like, take such longer. I mean, conventionally, most people in the U.S. have, like, 2 to 3 weeks vacation time. Like, that's what most practice owner, or, you know, job owners, business owners provide, yeah, 2 weeks, at least weeks, paid time, right?
Right.
And, like, you can kind of see both sides of it. Like, you can see as a practice owner why they couldn't pay you for 2 months, but you could see as a person why, I mean, so much of the masses want to take more time off but can't afford it, right? Not necessarily about the expense, but, like, I can't afford to take the time off. I can't afford to not get paid. I need to keep working. Or as a owner of a practice, I can't afford to leave my chair open and not be seeing patients. But then there's this, you know, the side of, like, our mental health and enjoying life. It's just a weird thing that why has the U.S. been this way versus nowhere else in the world is like that. Crickets.
I mean, I think that it's just the fact that, you know, that's the American dream, right? I mean, just, you know, wanting to come to the U.S. is you gotta work, you gotta grind, you gotta get it, right? Otherwise, you don't deserve to be here, right?
True.
But I mean, I feel like we got a glimpse of that when we with COVID and COVID shutdown, right? I mean, I don't know Absolutely. About you guys, but, like, you know, in 2020, we were shut down for, like, what, 5-6 weeks. And that year, we did great. And we were shut down, not seeing patients for 5-6 weeks. And we still did great. So, right. we were like, wow,
made those exams count.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Made them count.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's like, it's kind of like, well, maybe we should close the office for like 5-6 weeks every year, because it's like, it's not like we went into financial ruin or anything like that and people got by, you know. So it's definitely I think it's a culture thing, right? So it's just, where you're at. You know, do you want to, you know, work, or do you want to live and enjoy it?
Why did you come to the U.S.?
Family. All right. So that's an interesting, right? So whenever patients ask me, like, oh, so where I'm from, right? So obviously I'm not French, right? I don't look like a typical French guy. But so my parents are Chinese that immigrated to Vietnam for business. So my parents were born, okay. Both of my parents were both born and raised in Vietnam.
Interesting.
So then they lived there until they were like in their 20s also, but they had to leave right after the Vietnam War. And then because it was getting crazy there. But thankfully, so my parents actually had to have fake documented marriages to French people so that they could leave Vietnam and and go to France. Whereas rest of our family had to jump on these boats and be refugees leave Vietnam, go to the Philippines and be refugees in the Philippines. And then in the Philippines, they got picked up by the U.S. Consulate people. And then that's how they got to the U.S.
Crazy.
So we went to France because, you know, that was the one easy way to leave and not having to jump on a boat and things like that. So they had to get married.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but France, I believe there's a lot of French influence on the coast of Vietnam, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Vietnam was colonized by the French. So that's why you have so much of that influence on the Vietnamese coffee. You've got the baguettes with the, you know, the banh mi sandwiches. You've got the
Hoi An.
Yeah.
It was very French feeling when I visited a few years ago.
Sure. Yeah. So it's got a lot of French influences. So that's why my parents ended up there. And we lived there. They lived there for about 19 years, and it took them about 10 years to immigrate from France to the United States. So the reason why we really relocated is just because of family, you know. So, you know, we in 96 is when I moved to the United States, and we moved to Connecticut first. I lived out there, did most of my high school in Connecticut. Because my father's side of the family were in Connecticut. And then the summer before senior year in high school, moved out to California because my mother's side of the family was in California. And that's where we've been since then. So,
When along that, you know, crazy fun path, did you decide you wanted to go into eye care?
So I wanted to be a pediatrician, right? So I mean, I think all of us wanted to be at some point be a pediatrician, right?
But pediatrician or a vet, right?
Or like, a sports medicine doctor.
Yes.
Anyone who does sports wants that a little bit.
Yeah. Right. So believe it or not, actually, my entering major in college was computer science. Because this was like late 90s, right? Late 90s, like internet was booming. Everybody wanted to be CS major. But that major is actually, there were so many people that declared that as a major. That major actually was closed. So I actually went in undeclared. And I'm like, well, I like computers. I also like math. I think it'd be cool to be like an aerospace engineer. So I actually went in and declared that as an aerospace engineering major. I did one quarter of engineering level physics, and I said, I'm out, guys. I can't cut it. This is too much.
My dad's an aerospace engineer, by the way.
Oh, is it? Yes. I was just like, you thought it'd be cool to be an astronaut or something like that, right?
It seems like a lot of
optics.
It's complicated. Yeah. It is complicated.
Super complicated, yeah. So then I was like, I kind of like bio. You know, I was pretty good with sciences. So then I got into like the sciences. And then I went to a career fair. And then at the career fair, there was, you know, your MD. There was your, you know, physical therapist, dentist, pharmacist, optometrist. And then, you know, I think genuinely out of all of them, obviously everyone kind of will boast about their own profession and things like that. But I think genuinely the optometrist was the one that kind of like to me came out as like, oh, he really enjoys his profession. He's passionate about it and he's you know, he's not working crazy hours and he's giving people the gift of sight and things like that. So that was at that point, that's when I got intrigued and started shadowing some optometrists in town. And I was like, hey, I can see myself doing that. So that's how I got into optometry.
It's so fun always hearing each person's like shift, you know. It's, I think in, I don't know if in the US we set people up the right way. It's just like, pick what you think is cool as a 17-year-old to start your passion. You know what I mean? Pick your career arbitrarily, which is kind of, I don't know, like a big ask for a kid. Plus, you're going to invest in schooling and you're going to invest in perhaps grad school. Whatever direction you take, you probably are going to have a couple steps based off of like an opinion you make off you think like space engineering is cool.
That's what I did.
It's crazy. No, it's I don't know the right way to do it, but it is like what where you'd actually be a good fit versus, you know, where you should actually go and like be great and love.
I think that it's super important to like go and shadow people and see, so that way like be in real life, because it's like, you know, I mean, you don't know until you're like immersed in it. And then that's why I was like, well, you know, I want to know what it's like and see if I can see myself doing this type of stuff. And I think it's very helpful. I mean, people that I think it's been sort of lost. A lot of people don't realize that they, you know, to figure out what they want to do in life, they need to kind of like, okay, well, you know, maybe pick a profession and then go shadow somebody and see what, if that's what they want to do.
Totally.
So that way they, you know, save yourself some time and not waste 4 years of college.
Absolutely.
What's your refractive error, doctor?
I was a minus 350 OU prior to PRK.
Ooh, when did you do PRK?
I've had it 5 years ago.
Current practice?
Yes.
Yeah, good, yeah. Good. What? Yeah. Why did you do PRK and not LASIK?
Dry eye.
Oh, did you have dry eye or you wanted to avoid dry eye?
Yeah, no, I had dry eye and then I actually delayed it because I was scared that it was going to make it worse. And PRK actually didn't make it worse. So, you know, in hindsight, I probably would have done it earlier. But, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, you see these patients day in, day out and you're like, I don't want to be, I mean, I already had dry eye. I don't want to make it worse. So that's why I kind of waited a little bit. My wife actually got it like
she was a guinea pig.
She was. And she had LASIK. She didn't have dry eyes. So she was like, she was good.
Okay.
I mean, okay. I want to hear this then, because Jimmy and I are sitting pretty over here as emmetropes, basically. So
you guys are like the unicorns.
Right? All of us in eye care, one of the like hottest questions your patient's going to ask you is, should I get LASIK, right? And us three in this talk are all, you know, very involved in dry eye. You are the director and the creator of your dry eye center, correct, at your clinic?
Yes.
And what is the right answer, right? So I can easily say my opinion, but I know what LASIK is, basically, because I've basically had it, right? Like, I know what refractive surgery feels like. I wake up and see the clock across the wall. I never have issues. Like, I can't say how much it would impact someone's life, except I know how great mine is. Like, I couldn't imagine having to put glasses on to see. So I want to say, hey, the last patient I just saw has significant pain that disturbs his life. He doesn't work anymore on the computer because his dry eye pains him so much. But is that fair? Like, what is the right answer, especially when someone says, I have dry eye that affects my day to day, but I really want LASIK, right? Like, what do you say?
It's a very hard question, right? I mean, for me, that's one reason why I delayed it, and the reason why I didn't want to have it is because I know that dry eye pain is it affects your life. It affects your quality of life, you know? So, I mean, I see the upside of, you know, having to be able to wake up and be able to see and things like that. But I mean, at what cost, right? So, I mean, I think that that's why it's important for us as eye care professionals to, like, you know, do our due diligence and screen these patients, make sure that they're treated beforehand and get them as ready as possible. And if you can't get there, then I would not advise it. you know, I would say no, let's not do laser vision correction, because otherwise you're going to suffer more. And we've already done all these steps to kind of try to prevent you from getting ready, but maybe you never get ready.
What is getting there mean, clinically speaking, would you say?
You know, I'd like to see, no staining, no signs of SPK, a normalish T-bud of, you know, maybe like, you know, in the 7 or 8 range, 8 second range, good glands and good function on the glands, as long as I can get them to, you know, more good days than bad days, that's sort of like my threshold, you know.
I like that.
Yeah.
Do you treat everybody? What's your protocol on that? Is there, I've heard, and I know we all, dabble in dry eye here, so we've all heard the, you know, well, your LASIK patients are great patients for, you know, topical immunosuppressants and so forth. And so what do you think about that? Is that a standard at your office? I'm sure you're doing a lot of LASIK there. So are you, is that a normal approach, not a normal approach? What do you think about that?
No, I think that we try to screen everybody for dry eye before when they come in during their refractive consults, right? So then it's like, you know, we'll do a mibography, we'll do all the staining and all that stuff. And if we feel that during the screening process, you know, we'll do a speed questionnaire and all that stuff. And if we feel like during the consult, we're like, well, you know, your surface is not quite ready, then we'll delay it. You know, because we want to do what's right for the patient, and then we get them ready. You know, whether it be, like you said, you know, immunomodulator or defitograss or amniotic membrane or steroids or whatnot. It's just we got to do. I mean, sometimes it's IPL, sometimes it's Lipoflow. I mean, it's just whatever it takes, right?
I like that. So the people that, you know, screen, you know, zero on all of their dry eye score or surveys, the surface looks beautiful, not going to necessarily proactively treat, but anyone who has correct. Any inkling of an issue, worth correct. Treating.
Correct.
I like
correct.
That. Correct. I didn't even, I don't think, properly name drop the location. You're working currently at Empire Eye and Laser Center. Which yes. I was looking a little on the website. It's kind of cool. You have like 12-ish providers. I think I saw 2-ish MDs. The rest, either ODs or I think I saw nurse practitioners in there too.
Yeah, yeah. So we have 7 providers.
Okay.
So yeah,
okay.
So we have 2 MDs and 5 ODs, including a resident. And then we also have a nurse practitioner. Yes. So we have an aesthetic side to our practice, and that's what cool. our nurse practitioner does. So she does all the, you know, Botox, injection, filler. She does, you know, cool sculpting. Cool. Yeah. So the aesthetic stuff, which is, you know, that's how you hedge your bets.
Absolutely. I like that.
Is that a big side of the practice? Is it a growing? Is it robust? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about it.
It's absolutely robust. It's I would say maybe, you know, maybe half of our practice. She's killing it on the aesthetic side. Wow. Because it's all cash pay, right? I mean, we used to have a MD. Oculoplastics. He used to be actually one of the brothers that was part of the original partners of the practice, but because of business philosophy and things like that, he had to leave. We separated. But after he left our practice, she kind of like assumed that role, and she's making a killing. She's got a loyal following. We're actually, as of last June, we closed our optical. So we can build an aesthetic center just for her. Wow. And future providers. Like, so
leave the glasses to Werby.
That's exactly what it is. Yes, yes. It's a dying, you know, we're going to focus on anti-aging, beautifying. that's where people want.
I mean, the beauty industry we know is a multi, is it billion or trillion? I don't even know. I'm throwing in the T word, you know, but it's a huge industry, and you don't have to get any prior auths or do any payment plans. Nope. You want it, you pay, and people do it.
That's right.
It's there.
That's why you're in Costa Rica, right? Because there are people who have money and they just want, like, well, I want to be able to get what I want when I want. I don't want to have to wait
play
for my insurance
while I do it.
That's
while
right.
Playing with toucans. So something kind of unique about you, and I think a lot of people will find this very interesting. Tell me a little bit about the practice and how the backside of the practice works. I believe there's partners, correct?
Yeah. So
who are the partners?
So Daniel Chang is the ophthalmologist. So he was partner with his brother, who's Joe Chang, and he's the one that left our practice.
Still get together at holidays?
Yeah. So they're better brothers than they are business partners, right?
That's good.
Was one of the reasons. I mean, so I joined the practice in 2009. And then probably 3 years into practicing for them, you know, at my annual review, they were like, you're doing great. Everything's awesome. We love you. What can we do for you? Well, I said, well, now that you mention it, I'd like a piece of the pie if you'd let me get in on the pie, you know?
Yeah,
and they were taken aback by that a little bit because, you know, obviously, you know, MD practices don't like to have ODs. They usually like to employ them. But, you know, they were amenable to it. They were like, well, yeah, let's talk. You know, we like you. We can see this as a long-term relationship. And that's when they said, okay, well, and that's in 2010, I became a partner in the practice.
Cool. So, yeah, that's it. And I don't know many other situations like that. So that's fantastic. I think it's wonderful. I think more people should do that. I think more ophthalmologists should be open to it. More optometrists should ask for it.
Yeah,
there's absolutely. Just so many positives. So what do you see as different? You know, like what perspectives do you feel like you bring to the table, you know, when you guys get together and have partner meetings and discuss, you know, the practice? I mean, I've met your partner. He's a great guy, and I think, you know, he's probably a good guy to work with. And I would imagine it's easy, but, you know, hey, I'm sure there's some perspectives that may be different and have evolved. So, whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good because you have to have the right partner. You have to have the right person in order to be able to, you know, be called a colleague as opposed to an employee. I mean, he sees me as his equal as opposed to, you know, like somebody that he just kind of hired. So, you know, that's the first step, is you're making sure that you have somebody who sees you as your own person, as opposed to like, well, you just work for me. You're always going to work for me. And the perspective that I bring in is that, you know, I, as an optometrist, you know, there are things that they don't know we're capable of, right? I mean, some of the younger guys, for sure, yes, you know, they know that, you know, optometrists are not just, you know, your refractionists, right? You know, they know that we're able to, you know, do the medical eye care and practice full scope, and, you know, in some states we're able to, you know, do lasers and, you know, PRKs and things like that. So I mean, that's the perspective that I bring in, and also, you know, letting them know what we as a profession think like, right? So to them, it's like they talk to it, he is part of this group that's called Vanguard, right? So they're kind of like a Cedars Aspens, right? So that's basically like, you know, top-notch ophthalmologists, and they always talk about each other, and they talk about, you know, whenever they have any, you know, issues and whatnot, they always like, we'll shoot an email or text to the group and be like, hey, what do you pay your optometrist, or do you have optometrist partners, or, you know, what do you do in this situation, and things like that. And And then he'll kind of like come back to me and be like, hey, so my friend in my MD group said this and this and this about, you know, their optometrist. What are your thoughts on that? And so it's great to be able to, you know, just be there and give him that perspective.
Yeah, no, I think it's wonderful. And I think it's, do you ever hear like when you're with, if you're ever with him or going, if you're ever together and like, you know, be introduced as, you know, as my partner, as an optometrist, like, does anybody ever say like, oh, is that, yeah. did you ever get like, kind of like, oh, like, why the fuck would you do that? Like, yeah. did you ever get something like that?
He's very, he has done that in the past, and you know, that's what it goes back to, you know, just making sure you pick the right person, right? I mean, you got to have an ophthalmologist who's forward thinking and not like old school, and be willing to just kind of like, you know, trust in my competence that I'm gonna do what's best for the practice, what's best for both of us, and not just, you know, be just a random guy, you know. So
Are there any laws that have any effect on, you know, percentage ownership or anything along those lines in the state of California, MDOD?
Not in the state of California in terms of owning a medical practice. You just have to be a healthcare professional. So in order to, because we're a medical corporation. Now I also got to buy into the surgery center. Now that was a little bit more iffy. Because there's definitely a little bit more of a gray area, but talked it over with the lawyers and things like that. I did some research, and they said that it was kosher. So, but I hear that in other states, there's definitely some restrictions in terms of like, you know, ownership, percentage ownership, and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So, what's going on in practice right now? What's exciting? What do you got? What are you dealing with? What's good? What's bad? What's ugly? I know we've dealt with a lot of staff turnover over the last. You know, we opened a new practice about a year ago, and we've been just having lots of things with staff. So, you know, one of our practices doing great. The other practice doing okay. And then the other one, we're just got like a revolving door, and it's our newest practice, so it's hard to keep people there. What about you? What's going on in, you know, as a business owner?
You know, it's very similar things, you know, just to try to hire like good staff, people that they're, you know, we just hired a surgery scheduler 3 weeks ago, and we spent 3 weeks training her, and she just quit on us.
Did she actually call you? Did she call you and say, I'm not coming?
No.
This is the new thing.
It is.
They don't call. They don't call. We've had three people. They just don't show up. It's unreal.
Right.
Have you had that happen a lot?
Absolutely. Yeah, not showing up. And then same thing with the hiring thing. It's like they'll come for their first interview and then just no show for their second interview.
I'll tell you what. I actually went to somebody's house. I was so pissed. We had somebody, we hired them, and I knew, and we had their information. And it was just like... It's unreal. Like, it's frustrating. Unbelievable. Yes, it was like two blocks away. I'm like... I'm going to drive by and see, like, I'm just I just can't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. I'm just like, I was there the day before. She was so happy. She was so bubbly. It was so exciting. You know, this is great. This is going to be wonderful. No inkling of a negative anything, you know, like, yeah. It just blows your
mind. That babe took her money and she came to, I actually just saw her down the street here. She came to Costa Rica. I saw her on the beach.
what's the going rate for like a optician or a technician ballpark? You don't have to give me an exact per hour. In California, I would imagine it's
17 to 25.
Okay. All right. We're not too far off, but that's a little bit higher, but yeah, that's okay. Yep. Yep.
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, it's the entire United States right now is short staff. I mean, it's just, you know, people don't.
It's a great recession.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. Like the work ethic in this newer generation is just a lack.
They're all switching to the European mentality.
Yeah, I guess.
What gets you excited? What gets you excited? You go into practice. What are you excited about right now? You know, you kind of get like on those trends, right? You get a little fired up about things and you're like, yeah, this is exciting to me. Like, and I'm so excited to see how this goes and you want to see those patients back. What are you excited about right now in practice?
You know, I don't want to sound like a dry eye guy, but it's fine. It's fun to be in the dry eye space right now because there's just so much innovation, so much new stuff that's coming and that's already here. And it's just, you know, for me, it's just having the ability to help these patients because, you know, I mean, as I am a dry eye sufferer, I know what it's like to, you know, literally I can tell my patient, I'm like, I can feel your pain. And that's why I'm so passionate about, you know, making sure that you get better. And there's just, you know, even on those patients that are super difficult to treat, you know, I just tell them, I say, hey, don't lose hope because it's in the next couple of years, there's going to be, you know, something new that comes out and it's exciting. It's going to help. So that's, for me, that's what gets me excited and gets my juices going. It's just like being able to help these patients and say, hey, you know, hang in there. There's awesome stuff coming down the pipeline.
It is kind of fun being in the dry eye world because unlike, I feel like, I mean, glaucoma, it's like a new rebranded drop that we've already had or whatever. It's like, okay, is it actually, how much better is it than what we already have? Or, you know, a lot of other eye diseases, something comes out, but it's not, I would say dry eye and retina, but dry eye still first, where the coolest things are either here or coming and in the pipeline. So it's fun to be in our niche.
It is. It's a good time to be in our niche. It's definitely, you know, I mean, you know, 15 years ago, we had nothing. We had one medication, right? We had warm compresses. Yep. Now we got a slew
it's
of
kinda
things.
Easier though. It's like, look, this is all you got, you know, just do it.
Tears and warm compresses.
Now it's like, you know, you're gonna be all sorts of things.
That's true. That's definitely true. Now it's much more, and I think people are kinda like scared by that, you know, to be honest.
That's true.
You know, because they're like, now it's like it went from one thing to like 50 things. Where do I start?
It is intimidating a little bit, I guess, because you really have to understand why you're using it, as opposed to like a glaucoma drop. Do you really need to know why you would prescribe, you know, latanoprost over Kosoft or whatever?
Right.
Except you want something that has two and not one.
Right.
Okay, you started your dry eye center.
Ray doesn't do glaucoma.
I do it when I have to. Okay. Yeah.
She's like, do you really have to use a drop anyway in the first place?
It's making your dry eye worse.
Let some of the fluid out. Maybe.
I know the ones that are preservative free. Okay, I do my part. You started your dry eye center. How long has that been going on? Where it's been the official dry eye center?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, when I first started the practice, I was probably like I was hired on as a primary care optometrist. So I probably did that like for, you know, 5-6 years. And then, you know, I slowly, so probably 7 years ago. Yeah. Probably a little longer.
Okay. Now that you've kind of gone through the trenches, now you're kind of riding high. For those, I mean, everyone talks about like people starting down the path of whether it's creating their own dry eye center or, you know, just being more observant to the complaint of dry eye. What are maybe one or two things that you think is good advice in kind of starting down that path? Because it is kind of complicated. Not that it needs to be. You can either just dish out the prescriptions, you know, your cyclosporine, your lefitograss, you pick, or dry or warm compress every patient with dry eye complaints, or you kind of understand it. But like, what are your one or two things that you tell people who are saying, I want to do this too? How do I do it?
Yeah, you know, it's you don't have to have a lot, all right? I mean, it's like you don't have to have all the fancy bells and whistles and things like that. I mean, I say you have it, all that stuff already in your drawer, right? I mean, you have your vital dyes, right? So you got your sodium fluorescein, you got lissamine green, those are the two most important things, right? And for me, and then, you know, if you really want to get into it, I say, you know, get a...
We want to get into it.
Yeah, get a mibographer, right? For me, it's that was sort of like the... I think that the tipping point, right? So be able to do some form of mibography so I can show them that, like, hey, this is what's happening to your eye. You know, but, you know, just if you don't want to, if you can't afford to get a mibographer, even though there are some pretty affordable options out there.
What do you use? You said you use that for your pre-ops.
We use Olympus Scan. That's what we use. But there's definitely other stuff out there that's much, much more affordable, great quality stuff. But to me, that was what gives them, right? So it's like a picture is worth 1,000 words, right? So it's not like, you know, even like, excuse me, like slit lamp photography, right? I mean, if you really want to get into dry eye and you really want the patients to buy in, learn to take some photos with your slit lamp. And I don't even use an attachment. I use my iPhone. And I got
it's
all these awesome pictures.
It's just a small finesse.
Yes.
It is so easy.
You just take pictures and then you show them, right? You show the patient and say, hey, you don't feel anything? That's bad. I've seen these things. You see that Christmas tree here? That's bad. And as soon as they see that, they're like, oh, snap. You're right. Right? So that's how you get the buy-in, right? I mean, and you also have to, you know, spend a little bit of time. I think that a lot of offices and doctors are scared to, because they're like, well, I don't have the time. I don't have the time. I don't have the chair time. I'd rather sell them another pair of glasses. I'd rather, you know, see another patient and do another refraction. But what, you know, they don't realize that, like, the potential for medical billing is significantly higher than your $40, $50 exam fee that you get from your vision plans.
100%. So. Well, and I think that something that really was a pivot point for me in treating dry eye is that maybe not everyone cares to, you know, they might bring it up in their, you know, HPI, but when you start addressing it, maybe it actually isn't that big of a deal to them. So you'll say you're hitting points on how to make them feel a little bit better in their day to day. But the people that it's really bothering, I like to say, hey, you know, I really only have a couple more minutes to spend with you, but I'd love to spend more time just strictly devoted to figuring out why this is bothering you. If it keeps bothering you, please come back. Let me spend some time just doing a little more investigation. Here's a tip or two, but if it's not helping, please come back. And there you have a patient you're going to see probably at least two more times when they do. And if it's affecting their day to day, they will come back. And maybe sometimes they don't, and that's okay. It's just like some people don't want to buy a progressive when you say they should, and that's okay too. But you can give your advice, and that's all that really matters.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, when we had our optical, I mean, we'd see a ton of dry eye patients there. But they weren't there for their dry eye. They were there for, you know, my glasses. I'm here to renew my contacts. And, you know, I would say, hey, well, I'm seeing some signs of dryness. Here's an artificial tear. Get started on this artificial tears. Come back in a month. We're going to do a thorough evaluation so we can investigate and figure out exactly what's causing you to feel like your contacts are not as comfortable at the end of the day, or why you're having this fluctuation in your vision. Or if you're not having symptoms, why I'm seeing signs of the dryness, right? Because whenever you say, okay, I'm seeing scratches on your eye, that's what sells them. Because they're like, scratches?
Oh.
Does
How'd that get there?
Is that
what
permanent?
Does that mean?
Can we fix that?
Yeah.
That's how you hook them. You hook them.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it's a good thing because you need that to be fixed. Okay. Not to switch subjects too quickly, but I want to spend a couple minutes talking about one of your passion projects that you told me about that I think everyone should hear a little bit about. Obviously, I'm biased because I love the idea of traveling / just quitting your whole life and moving abroad. But you are part of an organization called OneSight. So tell everyone a little bit about OneSight.
Yeah. So OneSight is used to be the nonprofit branch of the evil empire of Luxottica. right? So they have created some good. Yeah, they have some good. And they're essentially are kind of like, you know, the Flying Samaritan, the Vosh people, but they do it on a much, much bigger scale, right? So, I mean, if any of you guys are participating on Vosh trips, it's whatever you could carry, right? I mean, like your trial lenses, you know, the 20 pairs of glasses that you got donated. But one side is they, you know, because they do most of the lion's share of these types of missions, they travel all over the world and all over the continental United States. And obviously pre-COVID, they, you know, I got a chance to, I have, like you were saying, I have a couple of passions, which is one is, you know, traveling and exploring the world. And then my other passion is obviously, you know, helping people with their eyesight. And this allowed me to do both, right? So, you know, some of the few places I were able to go to were Rajasthan in India. I got to go to Thailand. I went to Nicaragua. Huh? I went to Amman in Jordan. So it's like, you know, so it's awesome because you get to experience, like, it's almost like immersion, right? So you get thrown in, you get to experience the culture, you get to experience the people, and you get to help people at the same time. So it's kind of like, for me, cool. It's like win, 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 right? It's easy to, you know, get your checkbook out and donate money, but it's a little harder when you get into the weeds and actually help somebody. And that's what I love.
Super cool. I love that. I feel like you told me too.
You got into that because you were initially at LensCrafters. Is that how you got into it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, and they kind of stuck with you, or you stuck with them? How did you?
A little bit of both after being left the company. Yeah. So kind of a little bit of both. You know, because I was passionate about it. They kind of like, you know, grandfathered me in, even though I, you know, technically I'm not part of the company anymore. And I was able to kind of also channel their program and bring it to Bakersfield. In a couple of weeks from now, we're actually doing a clinic in Bakersfield. And then we're going to be seeing like some of the migrant children that are in our community, because we're I was saying earlier, in Bakersfield it's pretty big on ag, and so we get a lot of migrant workers that come, you know, seasonally to, you know, pick fruits in the fields, or, you know, prune the trees and whatnot, or harvest, you know, grapes and things like that. And then their children that are here, they get zero eye care, zero health care, right? Because these are undocumented workers, because they're migrant workers. So they're not even on Medicaid, right? Because they don't want to be in the system. Yeah. They don't want to be, you know. So then these migrant children, they get nothing. So we're going to be running a 1 week clinic where we're going to be doing eye exams on them and giving them free eyeglasses.
Very cool.
Yeah. Most from Mexico, is that where they would mostly be from? Yeah. Or from South America, Central America?
Yeah, mostly from Mexico. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Cool, that's fantastic.
Well, we ask all of our guests this before we end. This is you may or may not have heard of this question before, but we like to ask all of our guests what their spirit animal is. This is the animal that kind of defines your personality, kind of who you are, encompassed in the stereotype of a particular animal, so that those who don't know you can get a better glimpse into the real Vin.
Spirit animal.
It's a tough one.
It is. It is. It is tough.
It is a tough one.
This is our question that stumps them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd say wolf.
Ooh, okay. Wolf. I don't think we've ever had a wolf.
I like this one.
Have we ever had a wolf? I don't think we've ever had a wolf.
I don't think we have.
Yeah. So
you have to tell us why.
Yeah, I like wolf because I think that you can be part of a pack, right? So be part of community, and but then you could also have the aspect of being a lonesome wolf, a lone wolf, right? So then it's I like, sometimes I like to be alone. You know, I feel like I'm like an introvert, even though I don't seem like I'm an introvert. But then, like, other times I like to be, like, you know, extrovert and then be, like, part of a pack and like to, you know, get together and do things. But then, like, in the pack, I'm always, like, more like the leader of the pack. Right. So that's
so you're the alpha wolf.
Alpha wolf, yes. my wife would definitely agree with that. She's like, you need to stop being so much alpha. Stop dictating your terms. I don't work for you.
I don't work for you. Exactly.
So in that vein, we've this is a question we've been asking, you know, what is your spirit animal? But we started recently asking, what is your significant other's spirit animal also? And so what is your wife's spirit animal? This could get you into trouble.
Tough. Yeah, that's tough. She's social. I don't know. I feel like she's like a... I guess maybe a butterfly.
This is a tough one.
Yeah, it's tough.
Butterfly. It's all right.
Yeah, butterfly.
Have you been watching some Encanto lately? Butterfly.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
Mary Postis or Origitas.
Origitas. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have little kids. I have little kids.
Yes, I do. Yeah. How old are your kids? How old are they?
7.5 and 5.5.
Yeah. Yeah. We're right in the thick of it with you.
We have
what are their names?
Preston is the older one and Theodore is the younger one.
I love it. Don't one of your kids have their own like Instagram account or something? And what is it? It's like, dang, it's Preston
Preston. Yeah, it's not an Instagram account. It's a hashtag.
I love it. Oh yeah, my God. I love that. That's great.
Cause all of us are like, my wife is dang, it's Karen. I'm dang, it's Finn too. My sons dang, it's Theo and dang, it's Preston. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. I love that. That's perfect. What did you have like something like that for your wedding? Like your like, dang, we're married or something like that?
Oh yeah, no, we weren't cool enough. We got married like way early, like in 2008. When I don't know, I wasn't into the whole social media thing. My wife is we weren't cool enough for that.
Gotcha.
That's why my social
renewal of the vowels. Maybe you could do it then, and I'll take. You could just say thanks to Jimmy for this idea. You know, when you're saying your vowels,
dang, we did it again, or something like that.
Yeah, there you go. Oh yeah, no dang, idea. We made it. 5 years, 10 years, whatever. All right, we could go on for days. Well, what do you think, Roy? I think this was pretty good.
I think that was great. Dr. Dang, how can people, you know, what do you have coming up for lectures or events? How can people learn from you or get in touch with questions?
I'm lecturing at the Kentucky Optometric Association next month. So if you're in Kentucky, come check out their spring conference. I'll be doing 4 hours of lecturing there. Going to be lecturing in this at AOA with our good friend Jake Lang. So optometry's meeting. I'll be lecturing at the National Optometric Association in July in Anaheim. So if you wanted to come down to sunny California and go to Disneyland or something like that, come on down.
Right.
And then our Intrepid, our first inaugural Intrepid CE conference is happening in June. And nice. That's going to be in Newport Beach. So if you want to learn from some of the best of the best, I'll be lecturing there with some of our finest optometrists.
Very cool.
Very good.
Well, thank you so much for taking your time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
Well, that's it. Before we go, reach out to us for feedback, questions, stories, things you want us to talk about, either through email or on our Instagram or Facebook. We never depart without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for their support, both the amazing lenses they make and the great people they are to work with. And be sure and tune in and listen to our next episodes. But until then, try not to blink.